right now, like in-game items are actually a very small market. I actually thought that it was supposed to end the hundreds of billions. It's only 50 billion. Why? Because people don't want to spend money on stuff that they don't actually own. We're spending $50 billion a year on stuff that, okay, they can't actually resell it easily. It can be easily banned or confiscated from them by the game developers. Once they actually own their game assets, they're going to be spending trillions of dollars a year. We see this already with Axie. Axie, we're running at a yearly rate to do 1 billion, which is already 2% of the global in-game item market, even though we only have 100,000 people in our ecosystem.
This is season 2 of Voices of the Data Economy, a podcast supported by Ocean Protocol Foundation. We bring to you the voices shaping the data economy and challenging it at the same time. Listen to founders, tech policy experts, and pioneers in impact investing, all sharing their relationship with data. Hello and welcome. Today we have Jeff Zerlin with us, fondly known as Jiho in the crypto community. So hello, Jiho. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for inviting me. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us from Korea. Thanks to the remote world, we are able to do this. So Jiho is the head of growth at Axie Infinity, and Axie Infinity is the play-to-earn NFT game built on blockchain, where you own and sell your assets in a marketplace. So for people who are not familiar with it, Jiho, why don't you tell us a bit about the business model of Axie Infinity and how you got into the world of these cute creatures called Axies?
Yeah, definitely. So Axie is a cute creature collecting and battling game. But yeah, obviously the magic is that we use blockchain to create this real money player owned economy. So I got into NFTs in 2017. That's how I met a lot of the original Axie team members through CryptoKitties. I actually met Trung, who is the CEO of Axie / Sky Mavis, and Alexander. I met them playing CryptoKitties and kind of went down this crazy rabbit hole together. So I think you touched on, I guess, the business model. Our business model is a little bit different than a traditional game studio or gaming company. So rather than, relying on, selling copies of a game or selling, in-game resources, basically what we try and do is create a really awesome in-game economy where players can sell their NFTs and their in-game resources to anyone, anywhere in the world. And basically what we do is we just take 4.25% of all marketplace activity, right? So for example, today there was around $3 million of NFT volume on our marketplace. 4.25% of that gets taken as a fee for the for kind of running the game. Right now that fee goes to Sky Mavis, the developers of Axie Infinity. Soon in the future, we'll actually even be sharing that fee with all of the owners of our governance token. So it's a little bit different than your kind of typical game.
So how do you really feel that NFTs are changing the gaming industry? I mean, in terms of, let's say, how they are democratizing it in terms of gaming rights, or what changes for the gamers?
Sure. So I think the fundamental thing that NFTs do is it allows us to give full digital property rights to our players that allows them to, freely sell their in-game assets, their in-game resources to anyone, anywhere in the world. We basically create these peer-to-peer in-game economies that are trustless and that, I guess, work in really interesting ways. I think that's the fundamental innovation that NFTs bring to the gaming market. It allows for user-owned user-operated games and economies, and it creates much more interesting aligned incentives where, you know, the players and the developers are both incentivized to kind of grow the ecosystem around the game.
Okay, and also I think we missed that part in the first question itself, was that what is your personal relationship with gaming, and how did you get into what you're doing at Axie Infinity?
Yeah, so I'm a lifelong gamer. I grew up playing, you know, I'm half Korean, so the first thing that I ever did on the internet was playing StarCraft, 1997 or 1998 when I was 6 or 7 years old. So yeah, I've always been playing games. I was also really interested in how to make money playing games from an early age, and I was always getting in trouble, getting my accounts banned, violating terms of services, right? Because traditional game developers, they don't encourage people to try and, you know, monetize their time and effort spent within these game economies. So I think, you know, those frustrations really set me up to being receptive when I saw NFTs, and to be kind of, yeah, to see that there was demand from gamers like myself for a more open system.
So in terms of like how expensive, can I say that? Like if I'm an outsider and if I have to get into the play to earn NFT gaming world, how easy is it for me? Like what are my barriers to entry, and how can Axie Infinity help me in that area?
Yeah, so right now, in order to play Axie Infinity, you need 3 Axies. Axies are between $100 to $150 at the moment. And I think it depends on the day and the ETH prices. But you need 3 Axies to get started. So you can either buy those Axies, or you can actually borrow them from someone else for a cut of the tokens that you earn while playing the game. So yeah, like, you know, you'll need a blockchain wallet to get started, and 3 Axies.
And okay, let me rephrase this. So recently CoinDesk also covered the story of this huge community in Philippines that started making money by playing Axies. And there was this whole use case of how it could actually help people in daily lives where they are not able to earn money due to the pandemic, etc. And my question probably goes in that sphere, is that if you're really in a phase where you cannot afford these Axies, but you want to sort of still start making money, you explained a bit about you can borrow it, but what are really the other models as well that where you can get access to first those 3 first Axies? Like, I mean, $150 is not really affordable for a lot of parts of the world.
Yeah, so most of our players are from developing nations or developing economies where, yeah, they cannot afford to get started playing on their own. So that's where organizations like YGG or Yield Guild come in, where they have massive amounts of Axies. And then, you know, what they need, though, are hardworking, creative players/workers to actually man those Axies, to use them on a day-to-day basis. So, yeah, that's basically the system where, you know, these organizations, you could call them guilds, you might call them employment agencies, like metaverse employment agencies. They have these stockpiles of Axies, and they will give access to new players. They're called scholars right now within the system. And that's primarily how most of our players get started.
So when you say developing countries, what is the spread of like how many people are playing it, and in what all countries, and how has it been increasing over the years?
Yeah, so in the beginning, it was mostly, you know, collectors from the United States and Europe. But as our game has grown, it's been progressively a larger percentage of our player base has been coming from the developing world, places like Indonesia, the Philippines, Brazil. So I'd say like Philippines is around 50%, Indonesia 10%, Brazil 6%, Venezuela maybe 4%. I mean, we have players in every single country in the world except for Chad and Democratic Republic of Congo. So those are if anyone lives in those countries and wants to start playing, we can get used to it. So I think around 80% of our player base are from developing nations.
Oh, wow.
I think that's really important because these are the people who, the blockchain, if it's going to fulfill its potential, these are the types of people that need to be using it. It can't just be for, right, like people in Silicon Valley, Berlin, places like this, right? Like we need users, right? It's like the builders and the users cannot just always be the same overlapping group, right? Like we need people who are actually coming for the benefits. So I think one of the problems that the industry has is people always think about like, okay, how can we make it easier to use the technology? But they don't think enough about why people would use the technology in the first place. I think like, even though Axie has, this same amount of barriers or more than other blockchain applications, right? We still have 100,000 people who play Axie daily now, right? So 94,000 today. So I think what we try and do is really focus on the benefits. Obviously, we're working on making the tech really accessible and smooth as well.
So how do you really manage this? Like, I'm sure the people, whatever I understand from the documentary that I saw, and also to all our listeners who haven't seen it, should definitely go and see it, that how this number of people in Philippines actually started playing Axies and started paying their bills. So my question really is that people who were not aware of crypto and Ethereum at all, how did they really understand that, okay, how can I convert this into cash? Is there like a community help that you have or like a network online where they can ask all these things? Or I don't know, how do you manage this community within all these countries?
Yeah, so we have a Discord channel with 100,000 people in it. And if you go there, people have questions. If people want Axies, right, they'll have all their questions answered. Why? Because the community, it's their game, right? It's not just our game. We actually only own 20% of the game, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really a community-owned game. So yeah, there is a Discord channel, the support, almost 90% of the support is done by community volunteers. So it's pretty incredible. So yeah, it's a little bit hard to grasp, but yeah, people, usually when people want to get started, they might hear about it through something like Facebook or Twitter or even TikTok. If people hear about it from their friends and family, right? Like the thing that we're building towards is for our current users to be able to onboard their friends and family with a high success rate. If that happens, then we'll go viral, right? And that's what's starting to happen. And that's what I think why we've been successful is because we've made enough of an impact in our current users' lives that they want their friends and family to become our next wave of users, right? And so on and so forth, right? So I think that, that's been a big part of our success.
So who really owns the game asset IP of Axie Infinity? Like, it's you guys, right? I mean, in terms of when I'm selling NFTs, like these cute creatures, it's still the IP is still owned by Axie.
Yeah. So, like, do you mean like Sky Mavis? Yeah, I think the IP rights is a very interesting question. Right now, like, I mean, people own their game characters, right? So we allow them to monetize, right? So if they want to make art, like using Axies that they own, they're totally welcome to do that. We do for now have like a threshold where it's like, if you make over 10,000, based on selling, right, like art or even shirts or merch, using, you know, your axes. And we do ask after 10K to come to us for some kind of licensing deal. But yeah, we haven't had any kind of issues with that yet.
Okay, now I'm going to zoom out a little. And NFT gaming, particularly for me at least, it's I would say it's a new term in the last few years that has come up. And so if you could tell a bit about what percentage of it is in the total gaming industry, like NFT gaming, and how has NFT gaming particularly grown over the last 2-3 years? Because it's not just you, there are other players also that have recently raised capital and, you know, are gaining traction. So what does the growth look like and how optimistic are you about it?
Yeah, so we're growing at a 5% daily growth rate right now. Mm-hmm. So we had 88,000 daily active users yesterday. We're at 94,000 today. We just deployed onto our own sidechain called Ronin. Mm-hmm. It's been live for about a month. And in that month, volume has increased about 307%. Number of traders using our marketplace has gone up 174.4%. The number of axes sold has increased by 500%. So those are basically our monthly growth rates right now. I think, you know, this is it's really awesome. It's really amazing to see so many new faces coming into our community. It's also a time where like NFTs are not really as an industry, right? Like other projects are not growing right now. So it's kind of like, I think the cool thing, the best thing is that we're growing, but the rest of the NFT space is not right now. So it shows that, you know, we're not just growing because there's some interest right around mm-hmm. NFTs. It's actually because, our community is awesome and is spreading the word.
So basically, we can say that you knew about NFTs before anybody else, and you were doing it like even before it became like a cool thing to be in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was CryptoPunks, right? Mm. CryptoKitties. We met, and a lot of us met playing CryptoKitties. Mm. A lot of the Axie early community, a lot of like the veterans are from the CryptoKitty community, like people who were like, they were more interested in what would happen if the developers kept on working on a project for years, right? Rather than a couple of weeks or a month or something like that, right? So I think that was one of the things that we wanted to do with Axie is answer the question, what would happen if a team and a community mm-hmm. dedicated their lives to working on something? I think that's kind of the experiment behind Axie. I think it's really rare right now in the NFT space, because like right most of the time what you see is the devs, they might make some collectible collection or whatever, launch it, take the money, mm-hmm. and then it's like, oh, it's up to the community, it's decentralized, right? So I think our mm-hmm. approach is a little bit different, where we do believe in Sky Mavis playing an active role in the development of the ecosystem, building games, building marketplaces, you know, even building scaling solutions specific for the game. So,
okay. And also, you recently raised $7.5 million, and I think this will be used for Axies, right? Like Sky Mavis raised it. And so if you could take us through like the roadmap, like how does it look? How are you going to use these funds? Will they be used to, I don't know, like reduce the barrier to entry, or how will you scale play to earn with these funds?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, I think, you know, a lot of it is, you know, making the game more interesting, more fun, and also adding more gameplay elements. So we're revamping the current battle system, launching a battle system, a new battle system. Some people might call it Battles V2. That also mm-hmm. comes with upgraded art, upgraded animations. A lot of like awesome little surprises there as well. Then we also have another team that's working on Land, which based Land is kind of like a kingdom building game where you can build up a city or a town, harvest resources, attack territory to try and control resource nodes. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a cross between something like StarCraft, Civilization, and maybe Stardew Valley. So yeah, it's people are really excited about that. We also have that in the pipeline. But there's also a lot of stuff that needs to be made available on Ronin, like a Dex, different things that could increase the liquidity for NFT assets within our ecosystem. There's so much to build. We also, long term, we want to have an SDK so that the community can also take an active part in developing content for the game, or developing Axie content, developing Axie gameplay specifically, kind of like mine, what you see with Roblox right now, right? Like user generated games. And I think that's going to be really important for us as well. There's so much to build, right? So I think part of it is, okay, making the game more fun, increase, and then also adding stuff that's going to increase liquidity in the ecosystem. And then also like reducing barriers to entry, right? So in the, with the second battle system that we have coming soon, basically people will be able to play for free to get started. They'll get three starter axes that are not blockchain assets or anything like that, but they'll learn how to play the game. They may get a taste for earning, right? So they might be able to earn 5% of the in-game resources that a blockchain user could use. But the idea is just to, you know, kind of give people a little taste and an understanding of what the game is like before they have to make any huge economic decisions or even like go through a job application process for a scholarship. Scholarship process right now is very intense. People are making resumes, right? There is now basically, you know, it's like getting a job to get these axes. So that's good in that it indicates, yeah, like people take it really seriously. Something really interesting is happening. Mm-hmm. But it's also, right, there are so many people that want to play the game, but that aren't playing right now. So
what is the scholarship process? Can you explain that a bit?
It depends on the different ones, but typically they will make a resume or, you know, talk about their qualifications and then, yeah, apply to get three axes. They might do an interview. They might need to do like a FaceTime. I'm not sure because I don't actually run the scholarship programs, but this is just what I've heard. Is like there can be like very intense selection processes by the different guilds/programs.
Oh, that's cool. And and do you have a timeline in mind by when people would actually be able to get these axes for free and sort of start playing?
Yeah, so I see in our roadmap that it says in late 2021, early 2022, that we'll have a release of Axie on iOS/Android. So like the App Store, the Google Play Store. So probably around then. So maybe 7 to 9 months is maybe an estimate. But yeah, it's very hard to commit to a solid date, especially when you're building things that have never been built before.
And what is the sort of, like you said that your major market is developing countries right now. So is the US and Europe not interesting enough for you, or is it already saturated, or, that's just not your focus area. If you could tell a bit about that why not US and Europe as well?
I think actually a lot of the European and American players, they add a lot of value to the ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. They're the moderators they're making podcasts, they're making websites, right? They're not actually, the way that they add value to the ecosystem is not by playing the game. It's by creating content and being community leaders. Does that make sense? So when I say that most of our players are from emerging markets, right? These are the people who are actually playing the game. Whereas our community leaders, a lot of them are from, you know, the developing world, and they're doing awesome work. We wouldn't be able to get there. So it's really like, it's really a collective effort between everyone in the ecosystem. Everyone has a role to play, depending on what their skill set is. So, I think like we definitely need more people from Europe and, in America, North America, et cetera. But a lot of them, like, right, playing the game for $4 to $6 an hour is not as intriguing as, right, like accumulating a huge position in rare assets or the access token, the governance token, and then, right, trying to educate people, trying to make content for the game. That's their kind of way of having an effect on the ecosystem.
Okay.
There's also obviously there are people from the developing world who do that as well, and they're doing amazing stuff, and it's really needed for them to do that. But yeah, I would say, like, right, the majority of the people who actually play the game, like, they're clicking buttons, battling, things like that, they're from the developing world.
Okay. And okay, now I'll go a little bit of off track, but I think I saw one of your videos on YouTube where you talk about how to choose a credible NFT project. And why don't you give us, like, some tips on how to choose a credible NFT project now that we have you as a guest on our podcast?
Yeah, so I mean, I like to look at data. So you can go to different DApp tracking sites. DApp Radar is a good one because, they have a lot of devs, so they're able to really add stuff quickly. So you could go to DApp Radar. You can sort. They even now have an NFT section that you can go to, and then you can look at, okay, the volume, and look at the number of traders within the ecosystem. I like to look at, okay, like, I like to also go into these Discords, see how many people are in the Discords, to ask for help, to see how responsive the community is, to see if they're positive people, if they're high energy, whether it's, like, basically a community that I would like to be a part of or not. I think that's really important. I think NFTs are super social, so a lot of it is about the community. I always knew that Axie would be special because the community, even when the community was small, it was really tight-knit and high energy and upbeat. So I always knew that Axie would do well, even when, right, NFTs weren't popular and nobody really cared about what we were doing. So it's really the community. So I would also do that. There are certain things that also, like, you could look at the Alexa rating to see if the Alexa, if people are going to the website, website associated with the project. SimilarWeb also has some good data. I think those are that's kind of a summary of how to approach it, and it's always a good starting point for the rabbit hole.
Yeah. And how small, or I think I also asked this earlier, but probably we got lost in other things, but how small or how big is the percentage, or I would say the ratio of NFT gaming within gaming, like games on, yeah, traditional gaming?
I mean, it's like a decimal, right? It's not even thing, right? Yeah, the markets for in-game items is in the billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars, maybe around $50 billion per year, and according to certain sources. Right now, it looks like Axie, we're running at a rate of $1 billion per year. So, yeah, I mean, actually, that would still be like 2% at the current rate. That would be pretty cool. But in terms, right, so I think that the NFT, the market for NFTs will be a $1 trillion industry in 10 years.
Wow.
Right now, like, in-game items are actually a very small market. I actually thought that it was supposed to end the hundreds of billions. It's like not even that much money these days, but it's only $50 billion. Why? Because people don't want to spend money on stuff that they don't actually earn or that they don't actually own. Right? So people are spending $50 billion a year on stuff that, okay, they can't actually resell it easily. It can be easily banned or confiscated from them by the game developers. Once they actually own their game assets, they're going to be spending trillions of dollars a year. We see this already with Axie. Axie, we're running at a yearly rate to do $1 billion, which is already 2% of the global in-game item market, even though we only have 100,000 people in our ecosystem. So imagine when we have, you know, 50 million people playing Axie rather than 100,000, right? It's like at the ratio, it's going to be, Axie would be larger than the entire in-game item market, right? Why? Because the behavior is different, because people are empowered and they're spending more.
Wow. No, actually, that's interesting because it sort of also builds a relation between the gaming industry and an open data economy. I mean, sort of if you call assets data that you own. And it's also another area that will really revolutionize it. And as you said, people will feel empowered and feel like getting more and more involved in this.
Exactly. People deserve to own their data, right? Gamers deserve to own their game assets, their game profile, their in-game identity. This is all property. This is all stuff that people should own. We just have never even thought that people should own this stuff at a mass scale, and society is still waking up to it, right? Like some people are still grasping with why they would actually want to own their stuff online, but mm-hmm. right, what kind of overreach of tech companies, governments, like more and more people are starting to demand these types of rights, I think, and it's just only going to increase over time.
And how, this is just more a general question, not probably related to gaming, but what kind of awareness or movement do you see in Asia as per, when it comes to owning data rights? Because Europe in itself is like super regulated, and you can also see that people are conscious and, you know, they are becoming more and more conscious with GDPR and everything. But just a general sentiment without getting much into technicalities, how do you see the attitude of people towards their own data?
I think the thing that I noticed is that when you give people control of their data, all these other benefits emerge that they might not even associate with the fact that they have digital property rights, right? For example, in our gaming ecosystem, because people actually own the in-game resources that they earn, that's why they mm-hmm. can sell them and earn money by playing the game. But all they know is that they can earn money by playing this game and that it actually works. Does that make sense? A lot of them don't understand the link between freedom and their ability to earn by playing this game. That's for the people building these products oftentimes to figure out for the users. Does that make sense?
It does. And it gives a new perspective to me as well, but as I'm listening. So it does make sense.
When you give people freedom, like mm-hmm. all these other benefits and behaviors start to emerge that people, they don't know that it's because they have freedom. They're just doing what they now can do. Right. I guess. I think people are grateful, and I think they understand that they're part of some kind of revolution or movement. Mm-hmm. I think that's very clear. I think people within the Axie community, they know that it's more than a game. Can everyone say that it's because we're giving them true digital property rights? Maybe not all of them would be able to articulate it.
I mean, basically they had lack of options earlier, right? So they didn't know how it would feel to have an option to own it. So that's where freedom comes in. So yes. And, so good to know that the movement of data rights is also coming into the gaming industry as we all are struggling and fighting for our data rights around the world. And thank you for joining us today, Gio. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. It was awesome to be here.